Okay, welcome, welcome everyone. So happy to be here with all of you today. It was great to see some of you at our community Q&A call yesterday. For those of you that were there, I hope that you enjoyed it and got a lot out of it. And for those of you that weren't there, if you ever want to listen to those, you've got those recordings for you. So we are today going to continue our listening module. But before we do, a couple of logistics pieces that I wanted to make sure that I mention. First of all, by the end of the day today, those of you who opted into having a coaching partner for the program, we have matched you up. We've done our best, and you'll get by the end of the day today an email introducing you to your coaching partner. I'll be giving you at the end of our call today your first coaching partner assignment. You'll have time for this first coaching partner assignment. I know it'll take time for you to just connect with your partner and figure out when are you going to be meeting and, you know, set that up. So you'll have 2 weeks for this first coaching partner assignment to get yourself set. I posted, or the team posted, a video in the Facebook group. You'll also have access to it in your member center, where I share instructions and some different pieces about the partnering. Please watch the video. And also, you'll be getting similar but different instructions on the coaching partners as well. Every week, when I give a coaching partner assignment, there's a special tab in your member center that's just for those assignments. So you'll have it written as well, and kind of a log of that to go back to. All right, so those are the coaching partners. I'm so excited for you all to meet your partner and to get going with it. The other logistics piece that I wanted to mention today is, now that we've kind of opted in for the coaching partners, it's time to opt in for the small group calls. At the beginning of the program, the first month, we have a lot of different kind of logistics opt-in pieces. It's the best way over time that we've figured out to kind of every 2 weeks introduce another piece, but I promise it won't go on forever. So let me tell you a little bit about the small groups. They are optional. Some people love, similar to the Q&A calls, some people love to participate in the small group conversations, and they receive so much from it. Other people don't participate in the small group conversations at all, whether it's because of just time or interest. And that's fine. Like, if that's you, you'll get exactly what you need from all of the other elements in the training. We add this special option for the small groups, the small group conversations, for those of you who want to connect more with others in this cohort and in this community, for those of you who want to take what we're learning in the training calls and have longer discussions about what we are doing and, you know, about what we're looking at in the training calls. So those small group cohorts meet every other week. They meet, let me make sure I got my schedule right. They meet on Wednesdays at 12 Eastern. The first one is on, oh, sorry. They meet on Thursdays at 1 Eastern. scratch that. They meet on Thursdays at 1 Eastern. You'll get an email with all of this, by the way. And the first one is on April 27th. They're an hour long. They're 60 minutes long. And each time the small group cohorts meet, you'll be given a set of questions that are based on the last training call or two that we've had, questions to go deeper with. And then what's going to happen is the first couple of minutes of that call, you'll have opportunity to journal on those questions. And then Caitlin will divide you into breakout rooms of about 4 people each. And you'll have time to discuss the questions so that each person, you know, one way that human beings learn is through discussion of what you're learning. And that's why even in our training calls, I include journaling questions. I include shares. I ask you to share in the chat. It's another way of integrating and embodying and going deeper with material. So on those 60-minute calls, you'll journal a little bit on questions that will take you deeper from our training call topics. You'll have about 40 minutes in small groups to discuss so that everybody has opportunity for discussion and speaking and connecting. And then about the last 10 minutes of the call, Caitlin will bring you all back together as a group, and you'll share in the larger group takeaways and insights and you know what came through in those smaller discussions. These small group calls are really, really rich. Everybody always loves them. Again, if it's right for you, it's completely optional. In the past, we have done it where you meet with the same people each time. It's the same group of 4 or 5 each time. Because life is unpredictable and there's, you know, attendance, even though people commit, it's, you know, for sometimes it's hard for people to come every time. We're doing things a little bit differently this time, where you're going to be in a different group, kind of almost random, in a different group of 4 or 5 each time you meet. We ask that you opt in if you want to be participating in the small group cohorts. That way, if you don't want to be participating, you don't get all the reminder emails and all of that. So you'll be receiving emails to opt in over the next few days. What else do I want to tell you about it? You'll get the full schedule and all the information you need on it. Any questions for now, either on the partners or the group, the small group cohorts? And Rosa, I mentioned in the beginning, by the end of the day today, you're going to receive an email. I don't think they were sent out yet, but I know that you were paired up with a partner, and you'll get that email. Maria is asking when they start. They start on April 27th, and they always go from 1 to 2 Eastern on Thursdays. Any other cues right now on the small group cohorts or the coaching partners? No? Yeah, Jennifer.
What if you have to miss, if you are on the small group, is there a number that you can't miss?
Yeah, great question. We used to have that, but now that they're, you know, you'll meet with different people each time, it's okay if, you know, you need to miss a couple more. So we kind of are loosening that a bit. Yeah. Okay, great. Jen is asking if we want to participate and know. Yeah, same. Oh, yep. Same as the other Jennifer. Okay, great. Awesome. Okay, so as we jump in to part 2 of listening skills, oh, Jen, hold on, a question from a different Jen. Are the small group different than the partner, the buddies or the partners, they are. So your coaching partner is you and another person. You'll be given an assignment each training call to practice, to coach with each other and practice a particular skill that we've learned. The small group calls are opportunities to discuss with specific facilitated discussion questions what we're covering in the training calls. I ask, you know, the different questions are opinion questions based on what we're learning, review of what we're learning. I give client case studies based on what we're learning to discuss what would you do with this client. So it's different ways of learning and getting deeper into the content and the material. Okay. Any other cues? I want you all to be clear. No? All right. So I think we have time for one or two shares. I'd love to hear from you what's been resonating for you from our first call on listening, and have you been applying any of the foundational listening principles that we spoke about to your client calls or in your personal life? Have you been applying curiosity, listening to yourself as you listen to others, being aware that people want to be seen and heard, et cetera? And what have you been noticing and learning? What's been resonating for you? Who wants to share? Don't be shy, Jessica.
This isn't actually from the deep listening module. It's from the week prior, equalizing the playing field. But it was just a really interesting exploration. My husband and I started some relationship coaching to work on a particular area of our relationship. And I was just like watching the way that she set the container up. And it was a very safe container. Like, I thought it was really well done. But one of the things that struck me that she did right at the beginning when we first got on the call with her was she said, right near the beginning, was, I'm going to be asking you both a lot of really personal questions. We're going to go deep. We're going to go right into it. And so I think it's only fair that I also allow you to ask me any questions that you might have before we get started, you know? And I was kind of surprised that she asked, so I didn't really have any deep, juicy questions to ask, but it really got me thinking, because I am curious about her, you know? I realized that she's also like another person, another human being. And it got me thinking, like, how would I feel if I was to say that to one of my clients? Like, you can ask me anything. Like, I think she literally said, you can ask me anything. I'm an open book. Let's go there. And I thought, oh, it really, I felt my body kind of contract. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't want them to ask about that or that. Or I wouldn't want them to, you know how much I earn or how many clients I have, because I work mainly with business clients. And it just kind of, it was so interesting because it really showed me the way that I was maybe a little bit closed down to being completely vulnerable and open with my clients. So whether I would actually incorporate that into my sessions or not, I think energetically it was such an interesting exploration to witness. Yeah.
I'm so glad you're sharing this. It is such an interesting example of equalizing the playing field. We can't expect our clients to be open and vulnerable if we're not also open and vulnerable. And the way that she did it is just such a beautiful way of letting you know that she is very willing to be open as well. And there's that equal playing field there. I love it. One thing I just want to note for you and for everyone is that I'm a big believer in the both and. And so in this case, you know, a both and, if you were to employ something like this, right, is ask me anything. There may be one or two things that don't feel appropriate for me to share, and I'll let you know, but I will always appreciate the question and probably answer 99% of the time, right? So it doesn't have to be only one way. There can be shades of gray, and both can live together. And even though I don't explicitly say it the way that this coach did at the beginning, my clients do know, because I let them know in different ways, that they can always ask me questions. And I mean, I can probably count on one hand over the last two decades, there've probably been five or less times I've been like, actually, you know what, not going to answer that, or I can answer this much of that, right? But we can let our clients know that we are open and vulnerable as well in lots of different ways. So thanks so much for sharing that. I'm so glad that you did. All right, I'm going to take one more share for now, Catherine.
Hey, okay, I'm going to leave my video off because my my internet's a little bit wonky in the room that I'm in. So, So I have been noticing just since we began that I'm just really trying to be aware of how I feel in my own body, like how present do I feel when I'm interacting with other people. And I don't have a coaching business. And so the client that I write about frequently is my 6.5-year-old child, who is just, you know, my greatest test at like staying present and equalizing the playing field and bringing respect and trust to all of the, you know, and just knowing that like she's whole and capable and I'm like whole and complete and, you know, all of that. So that's one of the things I've really been noticing. And I'm wondering, do we have a moment for me to ask, to bring a homework question into this?
Sure. Yeah.
Cause I enjoyed doing the homework assignments, and, when it got to the question of, like, how did that person feel and think? And like, what it's sort of asking about that, like, I found that question really hard to answer. And I got into this, like, I'm not even sure what she's asking of us. Like, what does she actually want to know? Like, I wish you would give an example. And I feel like some of my answers were either like very, very specific, or just like, I can see that this person really just like wants to be appreciated. I was at a holiday event this weekend. So there was like a lot of like conversations and kind of like role-playing conversations, almost of like catching up with someone I only see once a year, cause we're not actually friends, but we're in a community. And so there was a lot of that like posturing and presenting, and which always just makes me think like this person wants to be like seen and heard and, you know, but I was wondering if you had a moment to kind of help answer that question, or sort of what you were look like.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm having a crazy blind
spot. Which part of the sheet it was on? Like, what was the, just give me a little bit more of the context.
Yeah. So like the whole assignment was just sort of like, like, what are ways that I make people feel seen and heard? How have I felt seen and heard in the past? And then in conversations that you have this week, I just have the notes written down enough for me to know how to answer it. So this is not exactly it, but basically in conversations that you have this week, two or three times a day, write down like, how did that person feel and think, and what do they know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that question is really like the, let me explain the meaning or the intention behind that is back to like listening to our clients and then using that to listen to ourselves and what we sense about the client, right? So for example, you gave an example, you had a conversation with someone and they felt appreciated, right? That's a great answer to that question, you know, if that's the case, right? So it's about, okay, I'm listening to this person in front of me. And what is my inner wisdom telling me about this person, about how they're feeling right now in this moment? Are they talking, but they're really distracted and thinking about something else? Are they talking and fully present in this moment? And are they talking and they're not really being truthful with themselves? Are they saying this thing? I sense they're saying this thing because that's what they want. They think I want to hear, right? So those are some other examples as answers to that question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really helpful. That like changes my experience of the question a lot, or sort of what I'm looking for. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm so glad that you asked it, because it's a great way of just reviewing that piece again for all of us, right? Again, like when we listen to our clients or anyone else, we want to not only be listening to the words they're saying, right? But what do we sense about who they are as they're saying, what they're feeling, what their experience is, what's coming up for them, what's not being spoken. And we'll get to some more of those nuances a little later today in our call. Okay, great. So there's one other piece. There's one small piece, well, it's short, but it's a big piece that I didn't get to last week that I want to make sure we talk about together. It's one more foundational principle for listening. And you're going to hear me repeat this particular foundational principle over and over and over again throughout Sacred Depth. Listen, and this is actually such great setup from what Catherine just asked. Listen for the who. Listen for the who, because you always want to coach the what based on the who. You want to coach the what based on the who. What this means is we don't want to be one of those cookie cutter practitioners who every client, let's say we're working with relationships, and every client who wants to date but doesn't know how to take the next steps to date, that we're going to always strategize, for example, the same things with any client who wants to date but hasn't been able to move forward, right? Because each of those clients might be presenting with the same exact what, right? The same exact outer situation, but each of those clients are a very different who. Right? They're very different people at very different stages in their lives with different backgrounds and different fears and different talents or preferred ways of doing things, different things that they've learned, right? So when we're only listening for the what, when we're only listening for the situation and coach based on the what only, we're bypassing, like we're missing a lot of opportunity to tailor the coaching specifically for the person in front of us so that we can be the most effective with them. I'll give another example of this. So oftentimes I work with clients on creating an ideal schedule. We'll talk more about ideal schedule way later in the program. You know, schedules that really support the client to move through their week. I'm not going to coach a mother with four kids on creating an ideal schedule in the same way that I'm going to coach a single person who also maybe doesn't have parents that they're taking care of or other things in their life in that way, right? Each one of those who's is very different. And even though the goal for both is to create an ideal schedule, how we get there and what we look at is going to be very different for each person. That makes sense? We always want to coach the what based on the who. I want to give another example of this that is something that gets overlooked a lot that I really want to invite you all to consider. So as many of you might already know, I am a student. I like to say I'm a student of the cycles and the rhythms and the earth and the phases of the earth. And so this is very much related to this. Oftentimes, a mistake that practitioners make is that they assume that when a client starts working with them, that client is in a spring or summer phase. And what I mean by that is the assumption is made that the client is, we're working together. This client is in spring. They're ready to take action, right? Think about like the renewal and the rebirth of spring and the outwardness of summer. They're ready to go. They're ready to start doing new things. They're ready for new habits. They're ready to start, you know, doing all those outward actions. However, that's not always the case. Oftentimes, I'll say sometimes to often, when we start working with a client, that client is actually in an autumn or a winter phase. That client actually first needs to let go of some old things, old patterns, old fears before they can do the outward work of the spring and the summer. Or another example of being in an autumn or winter phase is that client may actually need rest. And they might need our support to help them finally have the courage to create more space and rest in their life before they do the outer action of the working on the big goal. A lot of coaches who aren't aware enough to listen to the who when someone starts, right? Where, what season are they in? And just coach the what. They have these big goals. We're like moving forward towards the goals. They end up getting stuck because the client isn't quite yet ready for that outer action, right? So we always want to be aware of coaching the what based on the who. And then particularly, we always want to be aware of what phase our client is in, what season our client is in, but we don't want to make this assumption that they're necessarily raring to go when they start with us. All right, let me pause on that for a moment. What's clicking for you here around the coaching, the what based on the who? What's clicking or feeling important? Yeah, Kristen is saying it's honoring of the human rhythms. It's so important. Throughout Sacred Depths, we're going to come back to different concepts like this because it is like this is what is not only most supportive of our clients to reach their goals, but actually doing this work with clients and approaching in this way helps mitigate so much shame that so many people have, right? Because they think they should be in spring when really they're in winter during that moment, right? It's part of the natural process. All the seasons come around. Johanna.
Thank you. This is all making so much sense and, you know, fitting in my life right now. And I just want to share that I've been going through a few tough years with my son who's 22, and we just found a good therapist to hold us as a family. And you know, one of the biggest reasons that I'm embarking on this coaching and taking this course is because I feel sometimes that no matter which way I choose to communicate, which way I choose to listen, he doesn't feel heard, seen, or loved. And that really came up. And I feel, you know, and I know that this is true across the board, right? Depends on who the person is. And like you're saying, what season. Is there a way that you get in there with people or, I mean, do you ask them, your clients sometimes about what, how they feel best heard? Or, yeah, can you just share a little bit about that? Like really getting into empowering the other person to let us know what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the question. I kind of, I do want to say going into it, it's harder sometimes with like teenage and adult children yes. than it is with clients, right? Because of the nature of the relationship, but it's all for, you know, experimentation. But with clients, so first of all, even in my welcome pack, you know, I'll ask this verbally, but also as part of my questionnaire in my welcome packet, I always ask a question along the lines of, you know, there are moments in our work together where you might get stuck or where I might possibly see some things that you're not able to see. What do you know are the best ways you like to be lovingly made aware, right? Like, what are the best ways that you like awareness created for you? Sometimes if I feel like it's appropriate for a client, I'll say, what are ways that you love to be called in, right? Or called out. So I'll ask questions like that from the get-go so that I have that information. And then again, back to what we were talking about last week, shared agreements in the container, right? So then we can start to agree on like, if this comes up, this is how I might ask about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Then you're welcome. I'm so glad you asked. Juniper.
Hi. This is just a short share question because this is reminding me of an experience I had with someone who was coaching me. And what she did beautifully was help me identify that I was in winter. Like I went to her with my goals, but the truth of the matter was I was too exhausted to do anything. And I really did need her help in illuminating that for myself. Like just her help holding that space was amazing. But what happened is after maybe, you know, three sessions with her, it like everything went wrong. it was like okay, I'm resting, you know, I'm doing the work and I'm noticing a difference and it's hard and I appreciate this container, but I'm resting. But then it was like neither of us knew what to do with the remaining sessions at that time. And I don't know, we ended things and I think that was best for me. So I could just rest, but I'm just curious in that situation, if we want to be able to hold a client through that process, if you have any notes or experience with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, and that might can happen, just so everybody knows, like that might happen in the beginning of working together. That can happen in the middle of working together. Sometimes a life event comes up and a client needs rest too, right? In bigger ways. So it's always about defining and then redefining what the goals are. We'll go deep into the details of this in our visioning module, I promise, because there's lots of different things to look at. But even when rest becomes the top priority. So then it's like, okay, let's for a 2-month period, make that priority. What are the goals during this 2-month period of rest, defining those, not just rest, right? So defining the sub goals underneath, maybe it's about becoming more comfortable with rest. Maybe it's about learning how to let the people that have expectations of you, like getting better on your boundaries, working on those boundaries with rest, right? I'm making some things up. But so you want to work together to then define the goals for that period of time. Every now and again, if it comes up through, and this has not happened many times for me, but if it's come up like in the middle, like someone has a family member pass away, you know, for example, and they just, they need rest, they need a break, we might freeze our coaching for a month or two and then come back to it. Not always, but if a client needs that. And then this also speaks to, and you all have a like 5+ hour training on this in your member center. It speaks to what kinds of questions are you asking in the sales conversation as well? Because almost all cases, a client needing a rest, actually having coaching support is wonderful. Like that's a wonderful way to start out. But every now and again, it is actually best for someone to wait until they start, and you can't, nothing is foolproof, right? But you can usually gather that kind of information in a sales conversation. Great question. I'm glad you asked, and thanks for the share on your experience. And then, you know, I think that dovetails, I see there's in the chat a couple of questions about, so what can we ask? What kind of questions could we ask to determine what seasonal stage they're in? Couple of questions on that. So really it's about, you know, when a client, again, you'll see this in the sales conversation. I highly recommend making the time to listen to that training when you get a chance. But when you start to ask either a prospect or a client about not only what is it that they deeply desire, but like, why has it been hard? You know, what have some of the difficulties been? What are the ways that you haven't been able to reach these goals? If you're listening, right, like clients will start to say, or prospects, you know, they might say, I have a fear of this or that, or they might say, I feel so overwhelmed. I've been so busy for the last 2 years. I haven't had the space to do this, right? Or, you know, I actually was sick 3 times last year in this way that put me out for a week or 3 weeks, or each time you'll start to hear, or my father passed away a year and a half ago, and I just haven't, you know, I've been so tired, right? And then you ask more questions. Have you taken that more space for yourself? Or I haven't taken a vacation in X amount of time, right? So there's, you know, as you listen and ask those deeper questions, you'll start to hear more. Great. Yeah, and Amy in the chat is saying that all this relates to honoring client consent and not jumping into the I know what's best, or we can do this. Absolutely. And thanks, Jen, for posting the link to the to that training I was talking about. You all have access to it. Okay, great. Let's continue. For much of the rest of our time together today, we're gonna look at a listening tool that, again, at the outset is obvious, but I want us to really unpack this together so that we can get to the subtleties of this and help you listen in deeper and more powerful ways. And what we're going to be looking at is listening filters. So whenever we listen, no matter who or what we're listening to, we're never listening with clean ears unless we clean them first. We're never actually able to hear fully what the other person is saying and the layers beneath it until we recognize that whenever we're listening to someone or something else, we come to that experience with all of our own filters and biases. And all of those filters and biases can either help us listen really, really, really well, or they can become a big obstacle to truly hearing what others are sharing. Our filters and our biases are part and parcel of any conversation that we have, any learning experience we have, really any experience in life that we have. So what are our filters and our biases? It's kind of big. Our filters and our biases are our beliefs, our perspectives and understandings, all based on past experiences and our backgrounds. There are beliefs, perspectives, and understandings of basically anything based on our past experiences and backgrounds. And because they're so deeply embedded inside of us, unless we are actively aware of them, we're pretty much unaware of them. So let me give you some examples. If you have a religion, your religion is often a filter. Let's say you grew up Catholic, and particularly if you still practice Catholicism, when you listen to other people, you're likely listening through a Catholic filter, whether you realize it or not. You're more likely to realize it if you've challenged your Catholicism in the past, right? If you've like inspected it and challenged some of those beliefs. But if you've all just always practiced and never thought about it, you're likely listening through that filter and not aware of it. The part of the world where you live is another example of a filter. Again, particularly if you've lived in that certain area your entire life. When you listen to other people, you're listening through an urban filter or a suburban filter or an American filter or a Southern filter. So for example, if you've always lived in an urban environment, and if you've always lived in an urban environment and have never like really questioned it, you're gonna hear information based on an urban filter. Maybe you're gonna hear someone talk about where they live and you're gonna assume that there's diversity, or you're gonna assume that there's traffic, right? Because you've just lived in an urban environment all your life. Here's another, I can give a couple of other examples. They really can encompass so much. Let's say you've been thin all of your life. You automatically move through your life and listen with a thin filter. Again, if there were maybe family members who weren't thin, you may be more aware of it, but if you've always been and people in your family are, that might be an unchecked filter for you. And then you make assumptions about other people's experiences or desires or beliefs based on that filter. Give you a personal example. My very first business partner had an autoimmune illness. And I had never had an autoimmune illness before. And when we worked together, I was able to get things done way quicker than my business partner did. Because of her experience, it took her longer than it did me because she had certain challenges that I just didn't have. And until I checked my filter on that, I was incredibly frustrated that she wasn't meeting deadlines in the ways that I was meeting deadlines or didn't want to move through things as quickly as I wanted to move through things. Because I was looking through the filter and listening to that situation through the filter of someone that had never had those challenges before. And by the way, my mother has multiple sclerosis. So even with that experience and living through that, I was still in that business situation, until I checked the filter, it wasn't checked. And I was making assumptions about my business partner that just were not true because of it. So if we are get it done, people have always been get it done, people move at quick paces, we might be expecting a client to be done with something in a shorter period of time, right? We're listening to their situation through that unchecked filter. If we've never had writer's block and a client is about to write something big, if we don't check that, if we're not aware that our experience has been that we haven't had difficulty with writing, we're going to be listening through that filter and helping a client strategize through that unchecked filter. And that might not be what's best for them, that pacing for them or whatever it is. We might overlook having a conversation with them about potential obstacles or fears about writing. If everybody in your family has gone to college and you just take it for granted, you might be listening through that filter, right? Unchecked. And then if that filter goes unchecked, you might not realize that it's a really big deal for your client that she's gone to college. I once had a client who had an illness where she lost all of her hair. And it had already happened 10 years prior to when we started working together. In my family, like history, there are these kind of traumatic things around hair and hair loss and all of that. That was an unchecked filter for me. So I just made an assumption that this particular client struggled with the fact that she was bald. But that was such a wrong assumption. I was listening with an unchecked filter. That was my struggle. That was not her struggle. That makes sense? So I want to be clear. It's not that filters are bad or that they prevent you from being an amazing listener. Not at all. In fact, your filters have the power to help you understand the layers beneath the layers of what your client is sharing. Your filters, because of your past experiences, can help you really get someone way more quickly than the time it would take for them to explain all about themselves and their situations, right? Because you might have similar experiences. Your filters can be very, very, very powerful, right? For example, if you are a single parent who is working, that helps you understand another single parent who is also full-time working, that filter, right? If you have the desire to have children and you've had trouble getting pregnant, that's a filter that can help you understand a client with a similar experience. If you've lived in a foreign country and have had to be in that transition and figure that out, that can help you get a client who's in that situation so much better, so much quicker. Filters can be incredible for this if and only if we are aware of the filters. If and only if we go into conversations understanding that our filters are there and we don't just take it for granted and then let it slip into our unconscious. It's when we take the filters for granted that we get blocked in our listening. And that's when we make false assumptions about our clients. That's when we stop hearing the important details, or that's what maybe holds us back from getting curious about a particular client situation. That's when we run the risk of coaching the what without basing it on the who. So what we're really talking about here is the ability to really hear and see our clients fully and not through the distortion of our unchecked filters. All right, let me pause here for a moment. Let me see what's going on in the chat. Kavita's saying, I feel terribly about how impatient I used to be. I worked on it a lot, but work is still needed for so many of us. Your own physical challenges have taught you so much empathy. Yeah, that filter helps you be a better listener and a better seer, hearer, and lover of clients, right? Any suggestions for forgiving yourself for past transgressions? Yeah, I'm so glad you're asking. So first of all, I want to normalize. I want to, first of all, hopefully through this conversation, I'm not holding myself on a pedestal here, right? I want to normalize. I have listened with unchecked filters before, and I will again, right? Like, no perfection. This is not about being perfect in it all, but it is about in each moment being as aware as possible, right? So first of all, Kavita, I just offer that is like, it happens, right? Know that you are not alone. You are with the best, in those, you know, to use your words, transgressions. And what I would offer is writing a letter, a forgiveness letter to yourself and to that past self, right? From all that you know now and from deep self-compassion and self-love, and from a place of not expecting perfection of your current, future, or past self. So glad you asked about that. Catherine is asking, how do you balance curiosity and not go into nosiness? I'm so glad you're asking this, Catherine, because I wanted to, last week when we were talking about curiosity, I wanted to mention it, and I realized afterwards that I didn't. When I say it's a foundational principle of listening to be curious, this is true, but we don't want to cross the line of curiosity into like, ooh, I wonder, right? Like just that like human kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not coming to me, but just like to know, just to know, right? So one of the best ways to check that is when you get curious about something and you're like, oh, I want to find out more about that, to kind of do a quick check for yourself and ask yourself, is knowing more about that just because of open curiosity? Or am I actually curious about that? Because I think hearing the answer to that or asking that question will support a client to their stated goal for the session or for the work that we're doing together, right? So we always, always, with any question that we ask, we'll get this to this in our questioning module, but with any question that we want to ask, that we ask, we always want to be tracking, you know, does this apply back to the goals? Does this apply back to what my client wants to receive for this session and for the work together? Nisha, gossip. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Golda's saying, I can see where unchecked filters can lead the client to not feeling seen, heard, or loved. Yes. Okay, good. Let's keep on going with this. Okay. So we want to be aware of as many of our filters as we can. Again, without perfect, you know, no myth of perfection. And we want to especially be aware of the filters that come from a place of privilege. Because if you have a filter that's based on a privilege that you have, it is often the least challenged type of filter. And then you can end up centering things on that filter without even realizing it. And then you're even more prone to making assumptions. So we want to really, along with checking our filters, a subset of that is we want to be aware of our privilege in any given moment. So I'm going to give you some examples of this. This isn't an exhaustive list. We could go on and on forever, but I'm going to give you some examples of filters based on privilege, right? So race is one of them. And this isn't a coaching example. This is just an example of an unchecked filter around race from like out in the world, but I think it's really illustrative. So most of the time when you go to a hotel, you know, in hotel bathrooms, they have some toiletries, and oftentimes hotels have shampoo in the bathroom, you know, if you're going to wash your hair. That shampoo is almost always for white hair, not for any other type of hair, right? That's an unchecked filter based on a privilege, just an assumption that this shampoo, right, is for everybody. I'll give another example that happens to be about hotels, oddly, with a different kind of privilege. Religion is a privilege, right? Based on where you live, like in the United States, as an example, if you are Christian, that is a privilege, right? And in hotels in the US, there is almost always a Christian Bible in a hotel room, right? That's an unchecked, like, right? This Bible is for everybody, but it's not for everybody. If you are heterosexual, that is a privilege, right? A filter based on a privilege. If you are cisgendered, that your gender identity matches the gender assigned to you at birth, that is a filter based on a privilege. If you are able-bodied, that is a privilege. Economic level, higher economic level. If you grew up with two parents, if you grew up speaking the language that is most commonly spoken in the country that you live, right? So we want to be aware of these filters. Again, we don't want to make them bad, right? No filters are bad. It's just, are we aware of, like, how are we aware of them? And then how are we responding based on that awareness? Yes, being neurotypical is another privilege. Maria's asking, are you saying privilege is the majority, so it seems normal? Yeah, I think that's, I mean, it's not always the majority. It's usually, it can be the majority, but I'd say more it's about proximity to power. Right. Agnes is saying, like, Kim Kardashian during the COVID lockdown saying we're all in this together. She was not in it with everyone. She had many privileges that many other people didn't have that allowed her, right, to move through that experience in a very different way. Okay. So to be clear, it is more than okay if you don't have all of the same exact filters as your clients do. That is not a thing. It's how are you checking your filters so that you can really hear your clients? All right, let me pause here. I'd love to hear from a couple of you. What are you hearing so far about filters that feels important to you? What's clicking for you around this topic? What's resonating? What are you seeing, Jen?
Well, you bring up an interesting piece for me that's super vulnerable to share, but true. And it's a resistance piece. Sometimes I am a little nervous to work with African American women. Well, I think specifically women. For some reason, yeah, I was actually given the opportunity to work with an African American man. But, and I guess there's a question in here, and I, of course, right? Because of my difference in skin and privilege, I'm like worried I might offend them or not know the right thing to say or something. And I've heard this with other coaches that are white, and I think it just takes a vulnerable point to just like speak to it and just say, you know, I'm not black, or like I've worked with Asian women and I've just said, you know, and even though I can relate to some of their experiences, I have to be upfront and say like, there's no way I have the same experience as you do. Do you want to talk to that?
I think there's a couple of pieces here. So first piece is, yes, we need to, you know, again, whatever the privilege, race being one of them, we need to, first of all, check that filter inside of ourselves. And oftentimes acknowledging it then is really important, right? So back to our very first call a few weeks ago, I acknowledged a whole number of my privileges, right? And I did that very intentionally. And I said, I'm going to be checking those privileges. That speaks to this whole conversation that we're having right now, right? Like I acknowledged it because it is important, and it is important for anyone working with me in this program to know that I am aware of those privileges and I am checking them and I am doing my own work on that. So that's one piece. The second piece is along with this module, you'll all get a recording from guest teacher Makita Penny Cook that specifically looks at issues of race in coaching. And then we're also going to have a special live call with her, I believe in May. It should be on all of your calendars. I encourage, you know, particularly if you're white, I encourage you not only to listen to those calls and come to those calls, but also to do your own deepened education on all of this and learn from people of color. The more that we work on our privileges, particularly around race, then the more we can show up as clean as possible and supportive and helpful as possible for all of our clients. Thanks for bringing that up. Jaya.
Well, this privilege thing, I don't have any such privileges, I would say. I am an immigrant in this country. I am not white. And so from my side, it becomes like, you know, I don't know how do I define this filter, but since you brought this thing up, do you have any suggestion for me?
Yeah, I mean, it could be helpful to look at, you know, again, I only mentioned a small sliver of privileges, but, you know, I'm just going to give an example. Especially now that we have Zoom, we can see people, but back in the olden days when I used to do all my coaching on the phone, I have all of my fingers and I have all of my limbs. And, you know, until I was more aware of checking that privilege, I would just make the assumption that my client did. But that's not necessarily true, right? It may not be a huge privilege, but there's certain assumptions that I'm going to make if I'm talking to a client about exercise or this or that, if I'm assuming that they have all of their limbs. So there are kind of, I think, bigger privileges. I don't even want to name it that way. That's not right. I think there's all different kinds of privileges that we each have. Is it helpful to think about it that way?
I don't know, really. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah, maybe I think it could be a great exercise to think about. Are there, and if so, what are those privileges that you have that maybe somebody else doesn't? And see. I don't want to make any assumptions that you have any, but it could be valuable to do an exploration of it.
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
Yeah, I'll maybe think about it. Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer.
So a little along the line of privileges, but also filters. What's come up for me in this conversation is some of my clients that seem more privileged than me or hold positions that I've never held, like career, when I'm coaching on a career thing, or have way more money than I will ever have in my life. And noticing that I can easily make an assumption or a filter based on what I think their life is like because of that privilege,
yes.
Or thing that I don't have. So yeah. Noticing that as well.
I'm so glad you're bringing that into the conversation. Absolutely. Absolutely. So our beliefs are also part of this bigger definition of privilege, like what we believe about someone who's ultra rich or who's a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company, or right, whatever, like any of those beliefs. If we have never been divorced and nobody in our family has been divorced and our religion tells us that divorce is bad, our beliefs about someone who, right, like any of that can fall into it. So I'm glad that you're bringing it up. Maria.
I raised my hand and I took it down, but I guess I kind of have a question about privilege and filter, because every filter we have in a way is a privilege, right? So you speak a certain language, that's a privilege. If you can speak more than one language, that's a privilege. If you can, any and everything becomes the uniqueness that makes us different than another. So I'm having a question about privilege and filter, what's really the difference? I mean, I understand there's white American, and you know, there's these majority. That's where I was kind of going, like, are you saying majority? Because we all have that. And I think it's so important that we're talking about it, because we're talking about, somebody was talking about race. We're kind of talking about race. And I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed, I felt that everybody's heart starts beating. Ooh, we're about to talk about race. We're about to talk about power over or power with, and it becomes an uncomfortable conversation immediately. Even if, and then start to be like, well, I'm not like a white person, all the way white, you know, and you start to like define yourself and where do I fit in all these places? So I'm just bringing it up that it's so important that I'm grateful for these conversations about race and privilege and filters, because it's the most alive, and it's where all of us become actually the most engaged and authentic, when we can actually be in the conversation without the mask, and then each person can show up, and then it's not a, I mean, it stays like an alive conversation, rather than just going through the motion of a pleasant conversation. It becomes something that's actually real. And everybody's heart starts beating, and everybody starts breathing in and wondering about themselves. And so it helps us know ourselves and know each other better.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that. And I also want to say that might not be everybody's experience also.
That might not be. It does seem as soon as we talk about race and privilege, most people get pretty something.
We want to be, again, whatever it's so important to be aware of it.
So what I'm hearing you say is you're saying, oh, Maria, that's your filter.
Yeah. And it might be that many people share that filter, but we don't even want to make that assumption.
Yeah. Big stuff.
Thank you for sharing. So there's a question in the chat. How do you acknowledge without falling into stereotypes? So the acknowledgement is of our own filters, right? So I'm seeing the world through, for example, my Jewish filter. So we're not making an assumption about the person in front of us. The checking of the filter has to do with us and checking what is this lens that we're looking through right now. And let me be aware of the lens that I'm looking through right now. Rosa.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, we all have different language to talk about this stuff. One way I find helpful for myself to think about it is like, where am I standing? And I'm standing someplace based on my own experiences. And some of those experiences will, as you said before, will help me have an easier time being able to identify with some people because I've shared those experiences. But it's almost like being aware that each person has a different place in their standing and not assuming that everybody's standing in the same place or has shared the same experiences. And so where we're standing is just kind of where we're standing. Like we don't, you know, we didn't necessarily choose what country we were born in or what family we were born to or what body we were born into or what disability we were born into. But it's the experiences we've been given can be really useful as long as we don't assume that everybody has had them and we don't make anybody wrong for having had a different set of experiences, I guess. And that's just a small part of it, but I'm just translating it into, you're talking about filters and I tend to talk about standpoints and it does. It's like, if I'm standing over here, I can see all this stuff, but I can't see all this other stuff because I'm not in a place where, right? So we're always like the place that we're standing from, we're always seeing some things more clearly and we're always blind to some things. So I guess when you talk about being aware of our filters, I think about being aware of our blind spots, right? Like I have some experiences of what it's like to have a certain set of experiences, but I don't have any experience of what it's like to have a different set of experiences. And I guess that's where somebody was talking about being curious before. That's where I think that you know, if it's respectful curiosity and we say, you know, this has been my experience and I'm curious about what your experience has been, and I have a sense that it may have been different in some of these areas, then I think we can kind of create a mutual learning environment, which kind of gets at the leveling the playing field. Anyway, that's just how I'm thinking about it. And so I wanted to voice that.
Yeah. Yeah. So beautifully said. And I like that, particularly what you said in the beginning, is like this being aware of where we stand, right? And that that's not where everybody is standing from. And that's not everybody's view. All right, I'll take one more share on this for now. Lara.
Hi, this is really making me think about something I've been saying the last year or so, that I'm just sick to death of all my opinions. I have all these opinions and I'm making new ones every day, all the time. And I'm just so tired of it. Like, it's exhausting. And it also makes me aware of the concept of, and you've mentioned this multiple times, just being in the moment. And not living in the past and not living in the future. And that has seems, what are your thoughts about that connection with as far as your filters go or your privilege?
Talk a little bit more. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying about this, the past, present, future piece.
Just, you know, if you're having a conversation with a client or anyone, it comes back to the deep listening, just listening to them. And really, really being curious and really living in that moment, because, you know, their reality is changing all the time. Their opinions are changing about themselves all the time. You know, one day they might be feeling bad about not having a certain privilege, and the next day they might look at it like it's a strength, right? And the same for me. So I guess the deep listening really is about being in the moment and hearing exactly what they're saying in the moment and what they need in that moment. Because tomorrow they might need something different.
That's part of coaching the what based on the who. The who is also the who in the moment.
Right.
Yeah. Good. And then I'll just share, like, about the opinions piece, I chuckled a little when I forget exactly how you said it. You're sick of your opinions. I get that. But what I want to pull on with that is, and we'll look at this more when we look at creating awareness with clients, but the other place where, you know, checking all of our filters, our opinions as part of that really comes into play is it that can determine how we either craft a question or a reflection that we make to a client. And whenever I'm crafting a question, or, you know, I'll say, like, particularly if I'm reflecting something to a client, or I may have an idea for a client, I will often pre-qualify it with, this is not the truth, it is a truth. And this might be coming from my own filter, right? This may not apply to you. So I'm going to share it and then let's check it together to see if it resonates for you. So I tend to not hate on my opinions when I'm coaching, but again, it's more about being aware of them and then making, if I'm going to share an opinion, being very clear and co-creating that awareness with a client that it is an opinion from one particular filter as a jumping off ground to see what is a truth for the client. I hope that's helpful.
Oh, very helpful. Yeah, that I think that was exactly what I needed to hear. Not to be afraid of it, but just say, this is where I'm coming from right now.
Yeah, to name it, right? Sometimes I might be working with a client and I have a certain fear or concern that comes up. And I can't tell if like this is, sometimes I can't tell, is this a legit thing for the client or is this coming from my filter? And, you know, I'll listen more, I'll get more curious. But then if it persists, I might say, you haven't mentioned this, and this might not be of concern at all. This might be just because of my background and my own stuff. But, you know, as we're talking about blah, 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 I'm a little concerned about blah, blah, blah. How does that land for you? Right. So I'm creating awareness of the filter in all moments and not making that opinion the truth above all.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. What's one filter that has really helped you go deeper with clients? What's one filter that you have that it's actually helped you understand your clients way quicker than you would if you wouldn't have had that filter? Rosa saying your own trauma background. Good. Who else share in the chat? Nisha's saying, I'm a child of immigrants, so it helps when I'm talking to other children of immigrants. Yes. Katie's saying ADHD. Mm-hmm. Yes. Kristen's saying my experience with trauma and being neurodivergent. Yes. Catherine has a grief filter, believing that there's more going on under the surface. Yes. Jen, sexual assault, hospitalization, daughter of an immigrant. Yes. Maria having long, hard births, miscarriages, breastfeeding problems. Yes. Yeah. Good. Good. Our filters really can help us understand our clients so much better. What's a filter that has maybe been unchecked for you until this conversation right now that now you're aware of? What's a new filter that you're becoming aware of right now? Okay, so part of the work here is becoming aware of your own filters. As I said earlier, we can't be exhaustive about this. Like, I'm always discovering new filters, new opinions, new beliefs, right? So the work isn't to just like, okay, I need to know all of them or else I can't coach, right? The work is to be aware that we want to continuously be aware, right? And checking the thoughts, the filters, the beliefs that are coming up for us. You'll get some homework to help you go deeper with some of this, but this is like lifelong journey. This isn't once and done work. Another thing that can really help with all of this is to activate the highest level of empathy. Activate the highest level of empathy when you're listening. So the Merriam-Webster definition of empathy is the action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experience of another without having the feelings, thoughts, and experience fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. My simple definition of this, or I guess, coaching tool for this is whenever I'm listening to my client as best I can, I am putting myself in their shoes. I am trying as best I can to listen through their eyes, through their ears. I imagine myself looking through their eyes at the situation that they're describing. And even if we have some different filters, something that can often be helpful is finding a shared filter to apply. What I mean by that is I'm not particularly, I hope nobody rolls their eyes at this or makes any assumptions about me. I'm not particularly a pet person, although I'm warming up more to the idea of getting a dog, but in general, I'm not a pet person. So my natural filter without checking it is to not really think of pet issues as a big deal, right? But when I'm aware of that filter that I'm like not that into pets, then I can feel, but I do have another filter, which is that I've had a sick parent my whole life, and I understand the pain of having someone that I love so much with an illness, right? I can apply that filter to a client who has a pet that's ill, that is just so, so heartbroken about it, right? I can use the one to help me understand the other. Okay. Another thing that can help, I know we have just a couple minutes, is I want to encourage you as you listen to clients or to anyone to actively poke holes in the narratives or the assumptions that you're making when you're listening. Actively poke holes. And this relates to, here's another kind of filter that we haven't spoken about. And we will talk way more about this moving forward. But a lot of patriarchal thinking has seeped into us that we're just not aware of, right? So things like doing more is better than doing less. You know, there's only masculine and feminine in those binary terms, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those are filters too that we might be applying when we're listening and coaching, right? So how can we poke holes in these messages that we've just never challenged before? That will help us become better listeners as well. All right. So we've got just 2 minutes left. You'll have worksheets for this week, as you always do, and resource sheets. One thing in particular that I want to highlight is if you're working with clients for this next week, after each session, I want to invite you to take a little bit of time and list out both the filters that you checked during that conversation, and then look for any unchecked filters that showed up in that conversation. This is a practice, right? This will help build that muscle of in each moment checking filters. All right, I'd love to hear what you're taking away from our time together today. So what are you taking away? I'd love to hear at least one. Maria.
I suppose what I'm taking away is a question, because I responded to something and I was like, oh, you feel your heartbeat. And so what I could feel my heartbeat, and I'm in groups and I lead groups and I'm around groups and I tend to be able to, not always 100% accurately, but feel like, ooh. if my heart's beating, somebody else's heart's beating, our hearts are beating, right? And so then this is my question. If your heart's beating and you're like, oh, something's here. So then, and you just said, poke a hole in that. Like, don't just assume you know what's here just because the word race came up and that made your heart beat. Maybe it's somebody, something else, right? But so I guess my question is, how do you do that? How do you poke the hole? Okay, like, boom, I felt something, I responded to something. And as a group facilitator, often that's helped me guide things. So then I just want to be in that place. Like, so the awareness, oh, if your heart starts beating, that is the place to get curious for yourself and not assume for other people. And then the poking hole. So I guess that's what I'm ending with. How do you poke holes in the thing that makes you think, oh, I want more information because this feels really alive for me right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love the curiosity about it. And I don't want this to mean like, don't trust your intuition too. Right. But you know, in that example, like, oh, everybody's heart is beating. The hole that I might poke in that is like, I sense that many people's hearts are beating, but I also want to be aware that not everybody's is, right? So, maybe in that case, like the extreme, everybody or all, it's always like this, or every person, right? That just to be aware that may not be every person's experience. And then it doesn't mean that you don't address whatever your heart is pounding for that came up in the group, if you're sensing that it's there, but address it in a way that it's not making an assumption that everybody is feeling that way. Is that helpful to think about?
Yeah, that's really helpful. And this is a much bigger group, right, than what I'm usually working in when I'm facilitating. So there is that. But I really appreciate that because it was a very in-person, alive experience that we all just experienced. And so we could reflect on and learn from. Yeah. And so I like that to be a teaching.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome. All right. I'm going to turn off the recording.